The word came down that some supply officer got promoted to lieutenant colonel, and Major Sessions, who thought she was going to get the promotion, got passed over. I didn't care, but I thought Marla, who was all into being a woman soldier, would. She didn't. She's humping behind a desk, Marla said. I haven't seen her out here ducking bullets or playing hide-and-go-seek with Pablo. The whole promo thing's political, Cole said. Once you get up to captain, you have to start kissing butt to move up. Either that or you're in the hot zone and everybody above you gets nailed. They'd have to send an IED by mail back to Mama Sessions to get her, Marla said. Okay, so we all had the 411, and so here comes Major Sessions. Into our squad meeting looking like she just stepped out of a fashion magazine and talking about how good a job we've done. We've been asked to help a woman find her son, Major Sessions said. She went on about how, in what she called all the area conflicts, it was easy to lose track of people and how we were showing our humanity by helping the Iraqi woman find her son. She gave us some details. The kid was 14 and belonged to a tribe that we were trying to influence, and that even if we could confirm that he was dead, it would be cool because then they could have a decent Muslim funeral. All the time I was trying to imagine her with no pants on and her pistol strapped to her thigh. She added that she would be coming along with us. I'm not holding the blanket, Marla said when Major Sessions had left the tent. What's that mean? I asked. Darcy told me she went with some woman captain to mass, and when the captain had to pee, she made Darcy hold the blanket on the side of the road, Marla said. So if Major Sessions has to pee, you're going to have to hold the blanket, Bertie. I'll hold it, I said. I want to see what she's got under those fatigues, anyway. You got a girl back home? Marla was sitting on an empty MRE case loading up canisters of ammo for the squad gun. Sort of. Sort of? Marla turned to me with a big grin on her face. What does sort of mean? It means she's his old lady, but she doesn't know it. Jonesy called from across the room. It means that we talked and she said she was going to, you know, be my old lady and write and stuff, and we'd make all the big decisions later, I said. Bertie, the only letters you're getting over here are from your mother, Jonesy called. Jonesy, up yours. No, really, Bertie. Marla folded her fingers and laid her chin on them. You can tell me. Are you sleeping with this girl? How come that's your business? Yo, Jonesy, we got to make sure that Bertie gets home safe, Marla called out across the room. He's a virgin. Marla, you know, the last person that put their nose into my business. Oh, yeah, what kind of gun did she have? I didn't mind Marla getting on my case. I would have minded a few weeks before, but now it seemed cool, like family. The big deal about our mission was that the kid, Muhammad Latif al-Sada, was the son of a Sunni imam. Only we weren't to mention the al-Sada part of his name because it meant something and some other tribes might want to hurt him. We were getting more and more of that kind of talk. There was fighting going on between tribes, fighting between Sunnis and Shiites, and even between people living in different cities. It was like going into a neighborhood to stop crime and then finding out that most of the crime was about what gang you belonged to and nobody really wanted to stop it. The kid had been out on the streets of Baghdad past curfew and just disappeared. We were going to search the hospitals, detention centers, and the morgues. I knew he might have been shot and that if we found him at all, it would be in one of the makeshift morgues they were setting up all over the city. Every day Iraqis were being killed in Baghdad. Our army killed some of them. The ones we killed were mostly guys who attacked convoys or thought they could fire off a quick shot from a window. Sometimes Iraqi men were killed when they were out past curfew. Nobody could tell if they were trying to find something to steal or if they were really up to something. The coalition forces had won the hot war and the newscasts kept telling us that we were in the stabilizing and rebuilding phase of Operation Iraqi Freedom, but the situation was getting hairy. I couldn't understand what the Iraqis were about, or what they really wanted. The television coverage showed interviews with them, always men and usually, according to Jamil, Kurds, talking about how glad they were that Saddam Hussein was overthrown. It was Jonesy who had the question we all wanted to ask. If all the Iraqis are so happy with what we're doing over here, who the hell is shooting at us and laying out all the IEDs? he asked. Nobody had the answer. We did know that when they lined up to fight against our infantry guys, they went down hard. For every one of the coalition people that got killed, there were from 5 to 10 dead Iraqis. Maybe even more. Dead Iraqis didn't show up on the late news. When one of our guys was killed, we got the body off the streets quickly. We even washed up the blood. When the Iraqis were killed, it took a while for an ambulance to come and get the body. There would always be other Iraqis around, friends, mourning and crying, sometimes swearing revenge. I didn't know what they did with the bodies. I had heard that, according to their religion, they had to bury them within 3 days. A guy in the 4th Marines told me he had seen a bunch of dead bodies packed in ice in one of the morgues. He said the sight of it was something that would stay in his head forever. Yo, man, the Euphrates River looks blue and the Tigris looks green, Jonesy said. We were headed along the Tigris toward the Republican hospital. They had snatched Ahmed from our unit for the week and sent him over to where they were setting up a jail or holding pen at Abu Ghraib. We weren't supposed to take Jamil with us because he was a civilian, but we gave him 5 packs of American cigarettes and he came along. The hospital hadn't been hit during the bombing or in the fighting that followed. But it was shoddy, as far as American standards were concerned, and available only to the richer people. A poor man in Iraq might never speak to a doctor, Jamil said. In the West you complain about the cost in dollars. In Iraq your life is always in Allah's palm. We were waiting in the third floor office area for the hospital administrator to talk to us. We waited nearly 30 minutes, with Major Sessions sending first her aide and then Jonesy to remind the Iraqi staff that there were Americans to be dealt with. I felt a little bit ashamed of her. She was tough, but it was easy being tough when you had all the cards. The Iraqi who showed up was a tall, thin man in a white jacket. May I help you? He asked. Major Sessions told him about the kid we were looking for. We have a morgue attached to this hospital, he said. We are trying to put together a list of people we have identified who are in other morgues or buried. We can go over our lists. When did he disappear? On April 14th, Major Sessions said. So long ago? The Iraqi answered. We were overwhelmed during that period. It was all triage, very selective, very much, check to see if he is here. Major Sessions interrupted the Iraqi. Her voice was flat, hard. The Iraqi inhaled sharply, as if he were startled, and nodded. Of course, he said. We will see. Please come with me. The elevator wasn't working, so we walked down 2 flights of stairs to the basement morgue. The staff was working in blue overalls. Some wore surgical masks. One of the women wore a burqa and a surgical mask. The smell was strong enough to knock you down. I thought I was going to puke. The bodies were stacked in shelves, wrapped in cloth. Most had tags that I thought were it. Some of the bodies were short, maybe only 3 feet long. I guessed they were either children or body parts. The Iraqi who had brought us downstairs spoke to a woman in Arabic and she glanced at us before leaving the room. Through the doorway I saw her go up a flight of stairs. None of these bodies have been here that long, the administrator said, but since we don't know if the boy is dead or when he might have died, we can't tell much from the dates. Please feel free to look around. You can also see how successful the Americans and British have been in dispatching your enemies. The administrator was showing us what dying was about, what it looked like up close. Major Sessions looked around her, as if she needed a place to hide. Jamil found a chair for her and she sat. The major looked smaller sitting there, and for a moment I felt sorry for her. Just for a moment. Can we just look at the records? She asked. An American hospital would have records. The woman I had seen go upstairs returned with a huge book and put it on the desk against the wall. Jamil started looking through it, turning the pages, shrugging now and then, sometimes stopping to look at a name. The smell when we entered the morgue area was terrible, but as we breathed in the foul air it got worse and worse. A male attendant handed Marla and Major Sessions masks. Marla put hers over her face, but Major Sessions didn't. Instead she got up, took 2 steps toward the door, and threw up. There were 2 other morgues to check. We drop Major Sessions off in the green zone and me, Jonesy, and Marla went with Captain Coles and Jameel. Yo, Marla, you look pretty cute in that surgical mask, I said. It looked as if you were wearing a burqa. What do you say we don't check any more morgues, Marla said. We'll just say we did. Captain Coles wasn't going for it until Jameel told him it wasn't any use. We don't know what he looked like in life, Jameel said, shrugging. And the records just say things like male body and give some suggestion of how old the person might have been and how he came to die. Sometimes there is a name and address if they found identification on the body. But what? Captain Coles had his head to one side as he looked down at the shorter man. A lot of time the papers are taken by people who need them more than the dead person, Jameel said. That was enough for us to decide not to go to any other morgues. We went to another hospital and an aid station. None of the doctors or nurses or whoever they had working there were interested in helping us. One more dead boy is not of great importance when so many are dying, Jameel said with a shrug. The hospital workers don't think you're doing anything but wasting their time. We did see some horrendous wounds in one of the hospitals. There were men with limbs amputated, the bandages wrapped around the stumps of arms or legs. Sometimes they would be bloody. Relatives were in the wards, and even in the emergency rooms, comforting the patients. Doesn't say much for sanitation, Jonesy said. Jameel, are they bringing in insurgents to these hospitals? Captain Coles asked. Sir, they are bringing in Iraqi peoples, Jameel said. I'd been to American hospitals. Even the worst ones looked like palaces compared to the Iraqi hospitals. We took a break near a bridge and watched the MPs search the people, cars, and trucks going over it. A busload of school children rolled by. They waved at us. Jameel, what you thinking about all of this? Jonesy asked her interpreter. You glad to see Saddam go? Come back and ask me the same question in 1 year and I will tell you, Jameel said. We knew that Saddam was Satan, but we could recognize his mustache and learn to smile when he walked down the street. Who will be the new Satan? A guy with a cart of fresh fruit came down the street and we stopped him and bought some. Jameel negotiated the price, which must have been pretty good, because after the guy gave us the fruit he was smiling. We mounted up and Cole said that we were going to go to only one prison. When we got here the place was empty and all the cells were open, the captain that ran the prison said. The Iraqis had let them all out. I'm told the tanks were down the street and the prisoners were running out the side gates. Murderers, thieves, lunatics, everything. They let them loose. I guess the theory was that they'd make trouble for us the same way they made trouble for the Iraqis. Who's in here now? Coles asked. Whoever we pick up and don't know what to do with, was the answer. We're not sure if they're POWs or criminals or what. I think Central Command is trying to decide that back in Kuwait. Can you read any of them? Coles asked. Most of them, the captain replied. They're people we've caught at checkpoints with weapons in their cars, some with RPGs, a few who were looting. We were going to turn the looters over to the Iraqi police, but they didn't want them. The captain got two corporals to go through their records looking for the 14-year-old Muhammad. They came up with five possibilities. Muhammad is the most common name over here, one of the corporals said. And half of them discard their age and tell you that they're young so you won't put them in prison. They got the five guys out and Jameel took each one aside and talked to him. This is a creepy looking place, Marla said, looking around at the grimy walls and barbed wire. Even for jail. I was in jail one time in my life, Jonesy answered. For being drunk in public and I wasn't even drunk. Then why did you go to jail? Marla asked. I went into a store in Atlanta and shoplifted a pair of sunglasses, Jonesy said. Just when I started out the door, two cops came in and scared me so bad I nearly fell down. Then I started acting drunk, staggering around the store, and when I had the chance I ditched the sunglasses. And you went to jail for that? I asked. 4 hours, Jonesy said. Them with some $30 sunglasses. I could have got 60 days for them. The kid that Jameel brought over looked more like 12 than 14. He was a slight kid, with big eyes and a broad smile. He was jabbering away in Arabic a mile a minute and Jamil just nodded. He said he was out after curfew because his family goat had been killed by the bombing and he had seen a goat wandering around in the streets, Jamil said. He was trying to get the goat back to his house when the British caught him. They turned him over to the Americans. You believe him? No, he was probably out stealing, Jamil said. But he's the right child. Captain Coles had to clear permission to release Muhammad and put in a call to his commander, a lady general. It took nearly an hour to pull off, but finally the captain came and told us we could take Muhammad. The kid was so glad to be leaving the prison, he kissed all our hands and praised Allah over and over again. He says he loves Americans, Jamil said. Coles called Major Sessions and told her what had happened. She told us to bring the boy to headquarters. If she tries to take credit for finding him, I'm going to put a boot so far up her butt she's going to be sucking toes for a week. Marla said. Then you can take Muhammad's place in the jail, Coles said. We took Muhammad to Major Sessions, who already had a press conference set up. That pissed us off. Then they wanted to know who actually found the kid, and when our squad was singled out they took Marla, hat off so her blonde hair was showing, and interviewed her. How did it make you feel when you found Muhammad? The reporter was wearing his "This is serious" face. Pretty good, Marla said, trying to downplay the whole thing. Pretty good, the reporter repeated as he turned away from Marla toward the camera. For American soldiers, this rescue mission, reuniting an Iraqi child with his parents, is just part of the day's work. We got back just in time for supper. Jonesy started interviewing Marla again, holding his spoon up as a mic. Yo, Miss White Lady, how you feel rescuing a poor little Iraqi boy? It's Miss White Lady, Marla said. And I feel so glad to have done my part to save the world from evil and introduce a little boy to the joys of the free world. And if I see his little ass on the street after curfew, I'm going to shoot him. We kept Muhammad overnight and took him back to his village the next morning. Captain Coles asked Major Sessions if she wanted to go along. She said no. Marla made some more promises about what she was going to do to the Major, but actually we were really glad Sessions didn't go with us. Some women who knew Muhammad spotted him the moment he stepped out of the Humvee and started calling for his mother. She came out and we went through the whole bit of thank you and hand kissing again. It felt good to see people happy with something we had done for a change. From Perry, Robin, date, May 13, 2003, to Perry, Richard, subject, various, hey Uncle Richie, I am online again because they have set up a whole bank of computers for headquarters company and the press. The press can chase us off anytime they want, which sucks. The guys in headquarters company sit and write letters to their friends. No big deal. I see the Yankees are kicking butt again and with Jeter out. We're going all the way this year. We had a guy try to kill himself today. Captain Miller said that's happening a lot. Guys are getting spooked with the LEDs and the way the rules of engagement keep changing. Sometimes the rules we get them on what they call row cards can change in the middle of the day. My friend Jonesy said he was chasing a suspected sniper down the street and had to dial his cell phone with his other hand to figure out if he could shoot him or not. Mama is always asking if she can send me anything. I don't know how her money is with Pop in and out of the hospital with his high blood pressure. If your money is good, will you have her send me some toy dolls? They don't have to be expensive. We have little trucks and things for boys and the girls. Don't mind them, but I was just told I have to get off the computer. I hope there's a curse on this machine and that it gets this big-nosed sucker standing over me reading as I type in. I don't care if he is a company orderly. Love, Robin. Jerry Egri was a Polish-American guy assigned to our unit for 1 week until he got his regular assignment. He was going to be the liaison between the American troops and the Polish soldiers who were fighting with the coalition forces. What did you do back home? Jonesy asked. I taught kindergarten in Cleveland, not really in Cleveland, in Shaker Heights, Jerry said. Shaker Heights is like Cleveland dip in gold paint. You didn't like that? I asked. These kids were so pampered they made me change the rules when I taught them how to play soccer so they wouldn't get hit with the ball. Jerry laughed. You taught soccer? Jonesy was lying on his bunk and pulled himself up on one elbow.